Welcome to another outdoor edition of Get Lit With Literature. This is Monk, and you can find out more at the website. And this is part three, but it's gonna segue off in different tangents in a kind of editorial opinion piece. But it's part three of Fresh Banana Leaves, Healing Indigenous Landscapes Through Indigenous Science by Jessica Hernandez, PhD. And a section in her book that stood out to me with all the current gender stuff going on, and I don't know how to pronounce it, but MUXE is a third gender in our Zapotec culture, outside of the binary gender identities identified in Western culture that refers to a male assigned at birth who also embodies a female spirit. And there's somebody she interviewed named Elvish, shares how their relationship with nature and MUXE plays a major role and how they are taught to not just respect but also honor nature and Mother Earth. In the Zapotec community, I'm just gonna say M's are highly esteemed because they embody a higher spirituality than that of cisgender men and women according to our ancient codices. M's are mostly identified during their childhood, and this is how the community has been able to protect them and maintain this gender identity since time immemorial. When a mother realizes that her son was born AM, she makes the arrangements so her son can get an M role model to teach him how to maintain an integral role in the Zapotec society while being taught how to navigate their identity. An M can choose to dress in regalia that women in the community wear or decide to dress in the traditional clothing men wear. However, a M that dresses in women's regalia is ostracized by the patriarchal systems that have also been infiltrated in the Zapotec community because patriarchy is amplified through homophobia. Relationships that M's sustain are condemned by Christianity and Catholicism, two religions that are very present in the Zapotec communities, Oaxaca and the rest of Latin America. I continue my discussion with Elvis about the role M's play in the Zapotec society and how patriarchy impacts. M's play an economic function because we contribute to the economic validity through commercial exchange. There is a monetary remuneration, and because we continue to pay for the family for the care of the parents. A sexual function because we M's are the ones who initiate young people into sexual life. That's another one I've heard of these for many, many years in various cultures, who initiate young people into sexual life. Now, I think of that a lot because, I mean, around, you know, it's an initiation kind of thing in a conscious way, as was done in ancient Greece with the males and younger males, older males and younger males, whereas, you know, who knows, today it's more just, oh, I don't know, you used to be go to a bar and now you go online and you try to meet someone and you play the field, but where is the consciousness about it? It continues, a social function because we participate in the daily life of the place, J-U-C-H-I-T-A-N, through our work as embroiderers, makeup artists, hairdressers, cooks, etc. How does patriarchy impact you personally? Of course, I was impacted by patriarchy from my uncles who opposed my way of dressing to my father who hated M's. Later at school, when they wouldn't let me arrive dressed in skirts and a huipil or refused to be in the girls' line, as a result, I had to learn how to defend myself. Elvis's story demonstrates the important role M's play in the Zapotec community and overall Mexican society. Unfortunately, sometimes their role is not valued because of homophobia that overshadows their experiences and advocacy. Due to the gender violence that they face as well, many M leaders and advocates are murdered. This shows how even within the Echo Wars, those fighting for gender rights face violence and harm. One indigenous leader who was a strong advocate for M's was Oscar Cazorla Lopez. He was an M activist for over 40 years and was one of the founders of Las Intrepidas Buscadoras de Peligro, an M group that hosts the annual M Ball and Gala, where a queen reigns each year. There is an outdoor parade that takes over the entire city of Hukitan, however you pronounce that, and M's dressed in their elegant regalia and jewelry walk in this parade. Las Intrepidas Buscadoras del Peligro is a sisterhood that continues to build a welcoming environment for the M community. Oscar did a lot of the behind-the-scenes work in preparation for this annual ball, as he taught the M's the dances and cultural protocols that are followed in this event. It has been active for 45 years, and it is important to mention and recognize this ball has allowed our community to become more accepting of our M's, as religion was pushing away our cultural belief of accepting of our M's. Oscar was known as the patriarch of the M community, and it was thanks to him that M's have more rights, a stronger voice, and are even accepted in other regions of Hukitan. Oscar was assassinated at his own home, and his murder shocked the entire M community. Despite being violently murdered, to this day the culprit has not been found and no additional information has been provided about his case. Yeah, that goes on and on. And then further, another question, what does the M identity mean in this country? For me, the M identity in this century means more than a single word, a set of various actions such as tolerance, love, respect, and acceptance. Today, despite still living in a society in which patriarchy is very notorious, our identity as M's is advancing and achieving a change, albeit slow, but we continue to fight for our duality and identity to cover more space in our society. I would say the unified duality is the phrase I like, because it's there's a oneness to it, not a dualness to it. So if you get in that, the makeup, the clothing, the jewelry, these are roles that are just respected and accepted, as the book says, from time immemorial. And yet, even in the more open-minded modern terms, gay men, homosexual men are off. It's like a stereotype of, sort of, quote, queer that you parade around and, do that kind of stuff. But it's way more than that. If it's done in that, if it's done with the cultural sense and the true knowing of the tradition of it. And then later on, Hernandez writes, it is no surprise that it is our indigenous women who get to wear traditional clothing and regalia that are more detailed and adorned, while the men's traditional clothing and regalia tend to be white and simple. As my grandmother would tell me, this is due to the optics that are meant to make our indigenous women and M's shine more. According to physics, white projects light, and this is what our men are supposed to do. They are supposed to project the light we indigenous women and M's radiate due to our strength and close connection to our environments. This light is important to project to the skies, because that is where our gods, goddesses, and ancestors reside, in the clouds. In my Zapotec community and culture, we believe that our ancestors reside in the clouds alongside the gods and goddesses that created us. This is why we are considered the cloud people. And the strength and close connection to our environments reminds me of a saying I've heard natives say, that if you want to see, if you want to know how, I'm just trying to remember it, I'll probably paraphrase it, how a people care for the earth, see how they treat their women. So you could also put in the M's and the gender benders in that category. And as a perfect example, the way the corporate state works is to attack and extract, another form of rape of Mother Earth. And many times when the crews are there doing their dastardly deeds, there are known to be man camps, and there becomes much sexual abuse. And an increase in the murdered, missing, and indigenous women. So there's a perfect example of the Western Euro corporate state homophobic so-called culture that has disregard for both the earth and the women and the gender benders. So now I want to segue and give some more examples. As part of my path of the mystical Kabbalah, this is from a book, The Ladder of Lights, by William G. Gray. And some are familiar with the Greek god Hermes. He has a station on the Tree of Life, but this is in regards to this, because the Tree of Life has male-female balance to it. And this is the message that Hermes brings to mankind. Look for the woman in the man, and the man in the woman, and you will find the truth of both. Look for the woman in the man in the woman, and you will find the truth of both. And that's also very much a Jungian with the integration of male and female and the anima animus. So, yeah, where I that's my sense, aside from there's like a point something percentage of human beings that are actually born, I think, it with like hermaphroditic or mixed genitalia that's somehow different than the traditional, or somehow different than the quote standard male and female. But other than that, I would say that we are all at some level, from the most effeminate guy to the hunkiest guy to the butchest woman to the daintiest woman, we are all male and female. We all have these natural energies that are balanced going on, and it's how we integrate and balance them. And another book which I got many years ago, which is like 600 pages and I've just skimmed through bits, it's by Lewis Crompton, called Homosexuality and Civilization. And I'll just read one little bit. Well, I'll preface it by saying that part of it covers Greece, which is quite familiar to people as that topic, Christians and pagans, the medieval world, China, Italy, Spain, France, England, pre-Meiji Japan, Sapphic, feminine Greece. So the point being is that all these worldwide, there are worldwide examples of, to whatever degree, of what Hernandez in the Zapotec community is calling the M's. To my knowledge, the Lakota, it would be similar to the Winkte and various other, you know, many native traditions in North and Central and South America I've read about have this tradition too of respecting and honoring the gender benders. I like using that phrase because it's easy to remember and it rhymes. So it's a far cry from what much of the mainstream world is working through or evolving towards. I would add that I don't know why, and I would be interested to know as far as the Zapotec, why, you know, if there are females with the male energy identified, because that to me is part of the equation of male, female, or male with the female accentuation and female with the male. Here's an example in the book about ancient Egypt. In so much as the Egyptians, especially those of Alexandria, had been accustomed to honor their river through a priesthood composed of effeminate men, a further law was passed commanding the extermination of the whole class as vicious, that no one might thenceforward be found tainted with the like impurity. So this was coming from Constantine. Did Constantine go beyond? This was from the religious, the Christianity that came in. I think that's what that means in affecting Egypt. So this is a recurring theme reading throughout history, that as Hernandez says, from time immemorial. And so, but if we look at the past 2,000 years or so, obviously this is when the accentuation of the patriarchy and the religions, the male-dominated religions, the Abrahamic religions came in, and gosh, they just wreaked havoc on our sexuality, as far as simple enjoyment and as far as the consciousness that goes with it. You know, what's labeled sacred sexuality nowadays has sort of become common phrasing. That's a whole topic of which I've spoken and written about a little bit, is that, you know, that gets into other states of consciousness and energies that happen. So the sexuality isn't just about enjoyment or procreation. There are many, many levels to it. That is what's been squelched over so many thousands of years. And I think what the cultures now, at least in the West, is striving to find itself again, but it's a bit tangled. And just before getting into what's tangled, I want to add that I had recently watched a fascinating talk by Peter D'Errico, who was speaking about the doctrine of Christian discovery, which I've referenced a book by Stephen Newcomb many times and interviewed him in Get Lit with Literature. But part of the way some of the legal system has worked is that, and I don't know the exact reference, but it had to do with, in order to take over the native lands, that there was like this legal thing that it defines, like, I think the way the U.S., when the U.S. started, blacks were considered 3/5 of a person or something like that. So natives were considered less than a person. And so that enabled the rewriting of the laws to facilitate the taking over the lands. Because if the law says you can't take a land from another human being or another person, if they're less than a person, oh, that's legally, then the land can be taken. So that's part of the insane finagling of verbiage that gets done. But that's a serious part of the history of this land, Turtle Island, and this the country, U.S. So I think it's another way that the LGBT, genderbenders, and such like have been, you know, considered less than a person in many ways, at least societally and psychologically. You know, whether it's legal or not, that's another thing. Well, yeah, you know, the legalization of, you know, homosexual marriages as giving full rights to people that weren't given before, so that's a whole another topic about the legal aspects. But I just wanted to mention that because it's about respecting and honoring people as a full person, a human being that is, you know, finding itself or finding him or herself, whatever. So what I want to segue into is some of what I would call my personal opinion or editorial on this topic, which is why I'm so glad that Hernandez mentions that in her book, because it's not much, you know. I'm sure there's plenty of books out there, but I just haven't read about the openness to that as much. But I find the whole topic of the pronouns, I mean, I'll preface it by saying that I respect what anybody wants to call themselves, who they are, how they define themselves. You know, if somebody's a they or a him or a her, and there's like, I don't know, there's like 25, 30 or now 100 gender pronouns. I have lost track from the original alphabetic Sesame Street LGBTQIA, I think it is. Now it's beyond my comprehension or wanting to even memorize them all. But I respect people who choose to call themselves whatever they want to call themselves or they identify. I respect that. What I don't understand, maybe someone could explain it to me. What I don't understand is why the fixation that as human beings now sexuality is defining the label. I think that's the gist that I want. One of the gists I want to say is, how did sexuality become the defining of the person? Like, I get that people want to be more respected and this is how they feel and maybe they get certain rights for it. If you're LGBTQ and you're walking down the street or you see a store with a rainbow flag, that could give you great comfort to know that you'd be welcome there rather than, you know, fearing for your life at some other store. Or fearing, you know, fearing abuse at some other store. So I get that part, but I don't get why the fixation on the gender identification. Because I don't really, like, while I respect people, I don't care. Like, I sort of joke, but I mean it. Like, the only reason I would need to know what your sexual whatever is if I want to have sex with you. Because other than that, you're a human being, and I'm going to relate with you as a human being. I'd be interested to know what you are, what you call yourself. But the only time that identifying specifically would come to necessary to me, it would be like, okay, I want to have sex, but oh, if you're this gender, sorry. But if you're that gender, okay, maybe. So that's where I'm at with that. And then the pronoun thing too, I also find it interesting language-wise that people are labeling themselves nouns. So again, it may sound humorous, but this is how, if I had to be in a circle of people and we're all discussing, I would define myself as a we-ing, we-ing. Because first of all, I'm a we. I have consciousness of multiple lifetimes. I have aspects of, you know, male and female within myself. I have different names. I have my birth name, my family nickname, my spiritual path name. So I'm like multi personalities as we all are. So I consider myself a we rather than a they, because to me they objectifies and puts it over there. But I'm a we, and also because I care about and do these kind of things, writing and speaking, because I care about the big we, the world, the culture, and the earth, and all the nature. So I think of we is not just me, but it's a big we. So that's what I would say, I'm a we. And then the ing is because the ing is a verb, so it's active. And I don't want to be like a stuck noun. And then at the extreme other angle in the news was about Uganda. Is now, they're talking about 20 years of prison for promoting LGBTQ stuff. So there are some very backward, extremely steroidal, homophobic places in the world. That's a fact. But overall, I think people there's much more wider consciousness. And another part I do not understand is all the sex change stuff and the physical changing of the body, which it makes me question, like, you think God, you think spirit made a mistake? Or if you consider that, which I consider that people choose their parents and choose, you know, their embodiment as a spirit, that maybe you chose incorrectly. So I don't know, maybe somebody is evolving, maybe somebody is really does feel happier if they switch to a male or a female, and maybe that's part of their evolution. I can't speak to that because that's a deeper spiritual level that I can't speak to. But en masse, and for the billion-dollar industry that it's become with the sex change, which I think is being encouraged by the medical community and even the sort of woke aspect of gender culture, and everything's, you know, rainbow flag and it's all being sort of embraced. I think this is sort of being promoted by the corporate state for big business is part of it. So that's another angle. I mean, they're talking about like little kids, like 5 or 7 or 12 or whatever that are already talking about sex change. I mean, they haven't even, as a friend said to me, they haven't even had sex. So how can they know who they truly are, what their preference is? So I just find it very disturbing, this hyperfixation on sexual identity. And then the surgical aspect and the sex change stuff to go with it. But hey, if I was sitting down talking to somebody and they had that, you know, it wouldn't bother me. I'd be interested to know. Okay, and I want to also add in, because I had to look up the definitions, because part of the promotion of the sex change is based on what's called gender dysphoria, which is defined at the Mayo Clinic website as a feeling of discomfort or distress that might occur in people whose gender identity differs from their sex assigned at birth or sex-related physical characteristics. So there I find the wording odd. They're sex assigned at birth, which that again to me is like, you are what you are, and either you or the spirits or both chose it, so I don't get why it's assigned. But also I find it disturbing that a feeling of discomfort or distress, that is being used to promote, you know, gender therapies and hormone drugs and surgeries. Because, I mean, discomfort or distress, that is part of learning and growing as a normal part of life and evolving. So I feel like that's being taken advantage of, that it's like the pop a pill culture. When there's any kind of discomfort or dress, it's distress, it's no pun intended, any kind of comfort or dress or distress, there's a pop a pill surgery culture instead of just dealing with it and also looking at it from a spiritual angle, not just the physical. And I gotta satisfy my emotions by doing that. Also, it's in the Diagnostic and Structural Manual of Mental Disorders, American Psychiatric Association. The gender dysphoria is under a category of healthcare and effective treatment. So again, as like, you know, years ago, homosexuality was considered a mental disorder in that manual. So thank God we've moved past that to many degrees. But now the discomfort about one's gender is being labeled so as to promote the therapies and stuff. And the other part, and I looked up dysphoria, the Greek, it meant impatience under affliction, hard to be borne anguish. So again, I don't think people should suffer, and if they really want to do something to feel better, okay. But again, I feel like there's this like bypassing discomfort you know, impatience under affliction. Well, sometimes you just have to deal with stuff, no matter how impatient you are. And that's the builds character. So that's that flip side of the gender changing. And the other part of the definition of gender distress is very unhappy, dissatisfied, distressed. So again, it's like, how do we define these terms, and who is defining what happens if a kid, you know, from 4, 5, 10, 15, or an adult at whatever age goes to a place and says they are very dissatisfied, or they are in much affliction or anguish over their sexual identity, then who is promoting, and how do these decisions get made? That then that is the green pass to then physically alter their body by, you know, medical or chemical, whatever way it's done. So it's a complicated topic, and I think sexuality is a very intense topic that is overlooked and under talked about, but now it's like this whole gender identity thing has taken over, and I think it's at the expense of the sense of self and true sense of self, which in my personal experience has to do with the intertwining, much like the Caduceus on the staff of Hermes, the intertwining of male and female energies within. Some people choose to balance those within. Some people choose to balance those without. That's what, you know, the traditional, quote, traditional, one of the traditions of male-female heterosexual is that balance outside oneself. Yet, that doesn't mean they can't be balancing within oneself. But another choice is to forego the opposite sex and then devote one's energies towards balancing within to the fullest extent. So that is some of the path that I understand as what Hernandez mentions about the MUXE in the book, and that is throughout cultures in various places around Mother Earth. So it's a big topic, and if you got this far listening to all this, I appreciate you listening, because this is a topic I find both, you know, fascinating and, as I've expressed, very disturbing, what's going on. And I think they're just, I don't know where the clarity and the comfort is going to come from, but at least perhaps talking about it will help, and I don't know how that's going to work with all the you know, medical and institutional aspects of this and the corporate aspects. But as with any other topic, as well as is for the most part a highlight of Hernandez's book, the Healing Indigenous Landscapes, all these things though are interrelated, so that you see that the landscape is not separate from the sexuality and the interrelating with all beings that is part of the landscape and all the elements that are within us and that make us more than just little pronouns that are fixated on our genitalia. We are, you know, full-fledged body, mind, flesh, spirits. So thanks for listening, and be well.